Well, hello and welcome back to an incredibly cold and snowy Scotland. This is going to warm you up, though. It's the Archaeology News from Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, let's start with tools suggesting earlier human migration from Africa, then the enigmatic Mazora stone rings in Morocco. Did early humans domesticate the fox? Well, we'll find out in this story. And we listen to Professor Klaus Schmidt's views on the amazing Turkish temple of Göbekli Tepe. 160 ancient settlements are discovered in the Caucasus, and Bronze Age cairns are repaired in Wales by students. Polish archaeologists discover ancient carvings and artefacts in the Sudan, and the westernmost Xian dynasty site is discovered in China. Neanderthals turn out to be more athletic than their stereotype suggests, and sticking with the Neanderthal nose myth is dispelled. Finally, we have evidence of contact between humans and an extinct American elephant. Remember, of course, you can be listening to this on the Stone Pages Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the latest news as it happens. So, starting off today's podcast. Stone Age people apparently took a surprisingly fast track out of Africa via an unexpected route, Arabia. Modern humans reached Arabia's eastern edge as early as 125,000 years ago, according to a report in Science News magazine. That's a good 65,000 years earlier than has been generally accepted date for the first substantial human migrations beyond Africa. A cache of stone tools unearthed at the Arabian Peninsula rock shelter called Jebel Faya, located in what is now the Arab Emirates, resembled sharpened points and cutting implements from the East African sites of about the same age. This is according to a scientific team led by physical geographer Simon Armitage of the University of London and archaeologist Hans-Peter Uppermann of the University of Tübingen in Germany. The timing and dispersal of modern humans out of Africa has been the source of long-standing debate, though most evidence has pointed to an exodus along the Mediterranean Sea or along the Arabian coast approximately 60,000 years ago. Many advocates of this later African departure suspected a massive eruption of Indonesia's Mount Toba around 74,000 years ago created a global volcanic winter that decimated modern human populations in Africa and rendered the Indian subcontinent uninhabitable for thousands of years. Finds at Jebel Faya call that scenario into question, though. The anatomically modern humans, like you and me, had evolved in Africa about 200,000 years ago and subsequently populated the rest of the world. His findings should stimulate a re-evaluation of the means by which modern humans became a global species. The theory is this. By about 130,000 years ago, decreased sea levels narrowed the Bab al-Mandab Strait, separating East Africa from Southwest Arabia, to only about 4 kilometres, allowing safe passage, the researchers estimate. Travellers could have then moved through a network of Arabian lakes and rivers created by warm, wet conditions at the time. Initial finds at the site came from settlements dating to between about 3,000 and 10,000 years ago. Stone tools from roughly 38,000 years ago then started turning up. In March 2006, investigators began to unearth tools from the ancient rock shelter, which was occupied between 100 to 125,000 years ago. They found stone points, a few hand axes, and a variety of other sharpened rocks. The researchers analysed these Paleolithic stone tools using a technique called luminescence dating and discovered that they were technologically similar to tools produced by early modern humans in East Africa, but very different from those produced to the north in the Levant and in the mountains of Iran. Dr. Armitage calculated the stone tools at Jebel Faya to around about 125,000 years old, and they were immediately made after the period at which the Bab al-Mandab Seaway and the Nejd Plateau were passable. This suggests that early modern humans migrated into Arabia directly from Africa and not via the Nile Valley and the Near East. Geoffrey Rose, an archaeologist at the University of Birmingham in England, says that this is a find which is a huge milestone. Unfortunately, it raises more questions than answers. That's always the case though, isn't it? This theory has prompted numerous responses from scholars from India to New York. So go to stonepages.com to read some of these arguments. In Morocco, not far from the Atlantic coast and away from the major tourist attraction, lies a remarkable but enigmatic megalithic site. The Mazora Stone Ring is situated roughly 11 kilometres from the nearest town of Asila and about 27 kilometres from the ruins of ancient Lyxus. It's not easy to reach, so a small display in the archaeological museum at Tetuan is the most that the majority of visitors ever see or hear of this interesting site. Plutarch may have referred to Mazora in his Life of Sertorius, written around about 75 CE. He describes the Roman general Quintus Sertorius being told by local inhabitants about a site that they knew as the tomb of the giant Antaeus, who had been killed by Hercules. There are many other ancient accounts that place the tomb of Antaeus in close proximity to both Lyxus and Tangier, and it's quite plausible that Mazora is the inspiration behind these stories and myths. The site itself is a Neolithic ellipse of 168 surviving stones out of the 175 originally believed to have existed. The tallest of these stones is over 5 metres in height. At the centre of the ring, and quite probably a much later addition, is a large tumulus, today almost gone. The bulk of the damage to it seems to have been done by excavations undertaken in 1935 and 1936 by César Luis de Montalban. James Watt Maver from the USA conducted the only professional survey of the site back in the 70s. It's this survey that revealed Mazora not only to be remarkable in its own right, but to have implications for the history of megalithic sites in Britain. Mazora incredibly appears to have been constructed either by the same culture that erected the megalithic sites in France, Britain and Ireland, or by one that was intimately connected with them. The ellipse is constructed using a Pythagorean right-angled triangle of the ratio 12, 35, 37. The same technique was used in the construction of British stone ellipses, of which 30 good examples still survive, including the Sands of Forvay and the Daviot Rings. Furthermore, it appears that the same unit of measure, this megalithic yard, used in the construction of British sites surveyed by Professor Alexander Thom, was also used in the construction of Mazora. Thom proposed that achieving a circumference measured in whole numbers was of paramount importance to the builders of megalithic rings. But there is more. According to the studies by James Watt Maver, at least 7 stones of the Mazora circle mark different astronomical phenomena. Winter, summer solstices, sunrises and sunsets, as well as equinoxial sunrises and sunsets. Mazora isn't the only stone circle in Africa to share its construction methodology with British sites, but at present, Mazora is unmanaged, exposed and vulnerable. This monument surely deserves better protection and further study. Early humans may have preferred the fox to the dog as an animal companion. Researchers analysing remains at a prehistoric burial ground in Jordan have uncovered a grave in which a fox was buried with a human before part of it was then transferred to an adjacent grave. The University of Cambridge-led team believes that the unprecedented case points to some sort of emotional attachment between human and fox. Their paper suggests that the fox may have been kept as a pet and was being buried to accompany its master or mistress to the afterlife. If so, it marks the first known burial of its kind. The cemetery in northern Jordan is about 16,500 years old, which also makes it the grave 4,000 years older than the earliest known human dog burial and 7,000 years earlier than anything similar in Europe involving a fox. What appears to have been found is a case where a fox was killed and buried with its owner. Later, the grave was reopened for some reason and the human's body was moved, but because the link between the fox and the human must have been significant, the fox was moved as well, so that the person or people could still be accompanied by it into the afterlife. The research focused on the contents of 2 particular graves at Uyun al-Hammam, a representative site of the so-called early Epipaleolithic period, 16,500 years ago. The archaeologists spotted a connection between grave 1 on the site and grave 8, which lies beside it. but it was only opened more recently. In the first, they identified the remains of two adults, probably a man and a woman. The man had been buried earlier than the woman, and alongside him was the skull and humerus of a fox, as well as other grave goods. It was only when grave 8 was opened, however, that the researchers found both human remains that may have belonged to the same man and the skeletal remnants of what was almost certainly the same fox. The movement of the body parts is believed to have been highly significant. If the human body is the same in both cases, then none of the other grave goods except the fox were considered worth moving, strongly suggesting that the fox had some sort of special relationship to this human. Other such cases are very rare. Many of the next earliest involved dogs, including one site in Israel where a woman was buried with her hand resting on a puppy. But even they are 4,000 years younger than this site. The researchers are also suggesting that this early example of human-animal burial may be part of a bigger picture of growing cultural sophistication that's typically been associated with the farming societies of the Neolithic era, thousands of years later. However, the relationship between the man and that particular beast was probably short-lived. It's unlikely that foxes were ever truly domesticated in full, and that, despite their early head start, their recruitment as a friendly household pet fell by the wayside in later millennia, as their human masters took to the more companionable dog instead. Right, well, continuing this sort of early theme, an interesting archaeological site to visit would, of course, be Göbekli Tepe, an early site in southeast Turkey. Back in 1978, German archaeologist Professor Klaus Schmidt first came to Turkey to conduct research, when it wasn't until 1994 that he realized the importance of Göbekli Tepe. He calls it the oldest yet found and excavated place of cultic activity. So how did the site's significance come to light? One large piece of limestone on this site resembled the T-shaped heads of pillars that he knew from Nivali Kore, an early Neolithic place some kilometres to the north. But unlike Nivali Kore, which they were found only in the context of several special buildings, these pillars seemed to be appearing everywhere at Göbekli Tepe, which made it stand out as something unique in monumentality. To date, none of the other sites in the area have been researched to the same extent as Göbekli Tepe. The German Archaeological Institute supported him when he requested to start the dig back in 1994. For Professor Schmidt, Göbekli Tepe allows us an insight into the organisation of hunter-gatherer groups. As a result of work at the site is the realisation that there must have been a very complex degree of organisation in hunter-gatherer societies, and that non-sedentary groups were building monumental constructions. To build those gigantic circular arrangements would have required a certain degree of cooperation between various groups, as well as some organisation to coordinate the work as a whole. But could Göbekli Tepe have been a place of worship? Well, since there's no finds hinting at regular living activity at the place, it must have been used for different activities, and among them, cultic and ritual practices have to be mentioned. Another theory, of course, is that it could have been a burial ground. But if so, then where are the bones? They could have been situated in some other area not excavated yet, for example, within the banks between the pillars. As for the age of the site, well, the finds and other dating methods place the site in the 10th millennium BCE, with building activity ending at the end of the 9th millennium BCE. Göbekli Tepe is approximately 300 metres wide and 15 metres high, with only roughly 5% of the site being excavated thus far. Today's archaeologists have access to a wide variety of technology to help them with their work. The mound was examined in a geomagnetic survey, which showed that there were many more circular arrangements of pillars still buried there. A 3D laser scan was done recently to document the excavated areas in their current state. Several pillars have also been scanned and documented in high detail. The dimensions of the whole mound and the results of the geomagnetic survey indicate that there are more enclosures waiting to be uncovered. Schmidt's remarks that it's hard to give a detailed schedule on how long further excavation will take, but points out that there are work for more than one generation of archaeologists at this place, without question. Unfortunately, Göbekli Tepe hit the news late last year because a 40-centimetre high T-shaped stela with a human head above an animal figure was stolen from the site. The site was briefly closed to the public, but security has now been improved, and there's now a gate to the site and also a camera system in place. As a result of the increasing interest in Göbekli Tepe, there are plans for a visitor centre and a presentation of the site for the general public. It's just absolutely disgusting that somebody would actually steal one of these. I hope they get the centre up and running soon, though. That's the better news. Anyway, to Russia, an archaeological expedition headed by Dmitry Korobov has found about 200 ancient settlements following a uniform architectural concept on the Karabedian Ridge in the foothills of Mount Elbrus. The researchers believe that these could represent the traces of, wait for it, an unknown civilization. It is interesting to note that every ancient settlement found in the area has a direct view of the mountain. This can hardly be accidental. It seems that the ancient people had purposefully chosen places where they could see the mountain. By approximate calculations, a population of around about 25,000 people could have lived in all of the 160 settlements at the same time. The mysterious people disappeared just after the 9th century BCE. Apparently, they left their houses in the foothills and just went away. Scientists hope to solve at least a part of the riddle of the ancient inhabitants of this ridge. There is, for example, an assumption that the dwellers of Arkham, a big settlement that prospered behind the Urals in the 3rd and 2nd millennium BCE, could have reached this land. Now for some good Samaritan news. Army Preparation Corps students from Pembrokeshire College at Fol Dingarvhave have helped to repair a scheduled ancient monument in the Pembrokeshire Coast National Park in Wales. A group of 14 from the college joined the National Park Authority archaeologists and rangers to help reinstate damaged Bronze Age burial cairns on the Pertheli Hills. Fol Dingarvhave is a large hilltop Iron Age fort, and evidence suggests the settlement itself predates the defences. On the summit, there are three cairns, probably from the Bronze Age. It's a criminal offence to alter the scheduled ancient monument without permission. However, visitors have been moving stones to make shelters within the cairns. The students have now been helping to restore them to the original formation. Ranger Carol Owen added that having many hands made a large amount of work disappear very quickly, and that the team worked well together. They even had time for a trek over to the nearby bluestone outcrop, the stones which are said to have been the source of the inner circle of Stonehenge. You thought you were going to get away without the mention of Stonehenge this week. Well, you were wrong there. So they get to help out and get a cool side trip. Good for them. So let's move to a hotter trip, moving back to Africa, where a team of archaeologists from the Department of Archaeology of Africa in Poznan in Poland have experienced spectacular success during a recent survey in northeast Sudan, near Port Sudan. Their find comprised several dozen terracotta figurines of humans, cattle and phallic symbols, in addition to a plethora of stone carvings. In the immediate vicinity of cave engravings, the researchers found many traces of prehistoric settlement of different periods. The age of the finds has yet to be fully established, but geomorphological and environmental studies are also planned, together with radiocarbon analysis. Professor Michael, I'm not going to even attempt that. No, I should attempt the name. Kobasevich of the Poznan team believes that there is a link between the concentration of images of cattle and figurines and the phallically shaped mountain that they are located near. There may have been an association with a fertility cult. They hope to continue their research later this year. Over in China now, the Archaeological Institute of Shaanxi Province in central China reported that archaeologists have found ancient tombs, ash pits and a long ditch in the style and scale common to the Xia dynasty when they did their excavation work at the Lao Nipo ruins in Xi'an recently. The Xia dynasty is the first dynasty in China to be described in ancient historical chronicles, such as the records of the Grand Historium, and ruled between 2205 and 1766 BCE. Among the ancient remains, there are four Xia-era tombs, with 2 to 8 burial objects in each. In a more than 70 meter long ditch, pottery and remains belonging to the late culture of the early Chu, a city identified as the capital of the Xia dynasty, were also found. In addition, archaeologists did not find any objects later than the Shia dynasty, which indicates that the ditch could not have been constructed in any other period of time. Now, to the Neanderthals. Russian anthropologists and biotechnologists from Moscow have been studying models of hip bones and leg bones of ancient people, courtesy of the Anthropology Department of the Moscow State University, and compared peculiar features of Neanderthal musculoskeletal systems with images and drawings of Homo Neanderthalis remains from various collections. The scientists discovered that our human ancestors had been excellent sprinters, able to run as fast as 45 to 50 kilometres an hour. Modern human bodies are best fit for a slow, long run, sitting and perhaps long time standing. Neanderthals walked and stood with legs slightly bowed, which is why they rapidly got tired of long-term standing. As for sitting, ancient people preferred squatting to sitting because they had no immediate layer of fat and muscle on their hip bones. Archaeologists very rarely report finding smaller bones belonging to birds or other small animals on sites where ancient Neanderthals had lived. Homo Neanderthalis successfully hunted large animals, including such species as mountain goats and wild sheep, which are extremely cautious and difficult to hunt. Even with modern firearms, skeletons of ancient hunters often contain fractures in the upper part of the body, not in the legs, which can indicate that Homo Neanderthalis had hunted without using any throwing javelins or traps. The Russian anthropologists believe that Neanderthals hunted on their own. The ancient hunter could have crawled towards the animal as close as possible and then run as fast as he could, throwing or thrusting the spear while running. A heavy spear is very effective at a small distance. Calculations show that Neanderthal men could have been able to cover 15 to 20 metres within 1 to 2 seconds, which is enough for an unexpected and successful attack. I'll tell you, I would definitely find that rather unexpected if a Neanderthal came running at me in 1 to 2 seconds. But perhaps they would have heard them first. For over 150 years, it's been believed that Neanderthal man had developed a larger nose to help him warm inhaled air in very cold climates. This is despite the fact that modern humans, like the Inuit and Arctic animals, do not have these enlarged sinuses. Recent research has now dispelled this myth with some interesting conclusions. The team from Roehampton University in the UK was led by Dr. Todd Ray. The research was based on the comparison of several Neanderthal skulls older than 26,000 BCE and modern Homo sapiens skulls dating from between 500 to 1700 BCE to prevent distortion from modern living conditions such as central heating and air conditioning. The results showed that although the Neanderthal skulls were larger overall, the proportion of the nasal cavity to the skull size was the same in both species, so no special adaptations were apparent. This has led to a rethink on the habitat of Neanderthal man, long thought to have inhabited frozen tundra, and the reason for them dying out. Dr. Ray says that the view that Neanderthals were knuckle-dragging cavemen who scraped a living by hunting large animals in frozen wastes has been around since they were discovered back in the 19th century, because they were known to live at a time when Europe was in the grip of the last glacial. As a result, a lot of their physical traits have been attributed as adaptations that helped them live in the cold, even when it didn't make any sense. The picture of them as more of a temperate climate creature than one that lived in the cold fits the data much better. So, Neanderthal man is now thought to have lived in more temperate areas and may have been isolated in groups too small to survive as the glaciations pushed further south. And finally, Mexican archaeologists discovered 3 Clovis projectile heads associated to the remains of a family of extinct elephant-like animals called Gomphotheres, at least 12,000 years ago. The finding, made in the northern region of the Mexican state of Sonora, is relevant because they are the first evidence in North America of this animal linked directly to human species. The findings open the possibility of the coexistence of humans and Gomphotheres, animals similar to mammoths but smaller in this region of America, which of course contrasts with theories that declare that this species disappeared 30,000 years ago in this region of America and did not coexist with humans. The discovery took place in early January 2011 at El Fin del Mundo, Sonora, and was led by researchers from National Institute of Anthropology and History during the third field season at the site. It was identified as a hunting and quartering area during the Pleistocene. This finding completes a scene in which archaeologists visualized how Clovis groups hunted the elephant ancestor. This is an unprecedented find in Mexico, since it's the first time that projectile heads are found directly associated to a bone bed of this kind of elephant. There are no other Clovis archaeological sites where gomphotheres have been found, not even in the United States, where most important Clovis culture finds have been registered. And these vestiges are dated to between 10,600 and 11,600 years ago, according to the director of the project. The archaeologist Natalie Martinez, head of the field research, explained that Clovis projectile heads were discovered in the point named Locality 1, the remainder of a swamp with deposits of Pleistocene and Holocene eras, and were freed by scraping carefully at hard soil blocks. The lithic artifacts manufactured by the Clovis people to hunt great animals were located a few centimetres under the gomphother, discovered in previous field seasons as part of the research project. Gomphothers have only been found associated to humans in South America, and the southernmost Clovis heads were found in Costa Rica. Anyway, of course I can't say don't forget that our news is now available on the iPhone, iPod Touch and iPad. Have a look at stonepages.com/app. And of course, for more on these stories, you'll find them on Stone Pages, and you'll find these stories and more, of course, on Past Horizons, the archaeological news and article website, www.pasthorizons.com. Can I also remind people about my own website? Yes, Badger, www.bajr.org, if you're looking for archaeology work in the UK. Thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return again to us next week.